Everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I've got plenty going for you in this programme, and as usual, I would like to start with this week's message from Sheldon Neidel, which, for anyone who's unaware, it is messages set up for the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. I think Sheldon's messages are amongst the most reliable and probably the most interesting in the subject matter that they contain, and this week's, for me, is no exception. He's talking about how they have discussed in recent reports the changes that are affecting our entire local reality and her many compadres, and he goes on to say that it is their sincerest wish that we quickly succeed in our tasks and permit this first contact to be summarily completed. He goes on to talk about how the time-space continuum that envelops our world is transforming and how time is changing, and actually tells us that each year about 30 minutes of time is shaved off, and that at present, our day is actually just under 16 hours. And this time change is not noticeable, since our reality adjusts quickly to these changes. For example, our clocks and calendars function as before. But he says that nevertheless, this modification has quickened your seasons, causing odd changes in your weather and climate. He goes on to talk about our universe, and he mentions that the universe is reflecting back to us different images that are often blocked by old notions of what is real. And one example that he gives is looking at the stars in the night sky that behave in a strange way. Your mind tells you that the odd light patterns and apparent movements are caused by distortions in the Earth's atmosphere. But he says, if you spend enough time with this, you can see that this is not the case. Likewise, weird sounds and unaccountable feelings of uneasiness can signal that something is amiss in your reality. These are positive portents that your reality is indeed changing. He goes on to talk more about the universe and talks of us arriving at a point where we can view the universe in a more holistic way. And he says, next, you can see consciousness behind every action. And goes on to say that you have come to Mother Earth in order to learn and add your personal touch to this marvellous concoction, your living reality. And in turn, this reality has many vital points of wisdom to share with you. He goes on saying that your reality is as much a part of you as you are of her, and all living beings are immersed in a great unity that ultimately becomes the Creator. And mentions that your greatest prophets and seers have expressed this truth. This living universe is composed of a divine light ordered by love. It's interesting they're mentioning about how we are immersed in a great unity that ultimately becomes the Creator, because in the first instance, the universe, I think, has been best described as the mind creator, so clearly we do live within the consciousness of the Creator. So maybe that's confirming something that we've come to learn. Sheldon, speaking on behalf of the Galactic Federation, says that one of our purposes is to teach you the principles of our science of consciousness and how to quantify her properties. Then the many anomalies present in your observations can be easily accounted for. As you begin to integrate the various aspects of this science with your own, you can see how the process called enlightenment operates. You can begin to successfully quantify miracles and learn how the gracious acts of creation relate to the divine plan. He goes on to say that our task is to guide you by showing you the path that can lead to enlightenment. He talks of our transformation into full consciousness, and he says that this is a great joy that awaits you. He talks of our new reality, how it moves us beyond the realm of our present planetary state and permits us to become galactic. And he says, look upon your future with joy and know in your hearts that the new reality you seek is close at hand. Those on your world who seek to thwart you are now learning the futility of their dark ways. The crescendo of bells symbolizing your great victory is ready to peal forth. So that's all I intend to read out of Sheldon's message this evening, because I have my second favourite source of information, which comes out, I think it's on a monthly basis, which is Matthew's message through his mother. Going straight into this one, he is talking about the three primary sources of information that he shares with us. That was in reply to a question asking, where does Matthew get his information? And he says, I share with you the supreme ruler of this universe observations of activity on your planet. And in reading the Earth's field of potential, where energy motion indicates possibility, probability, and certainty of happenings, which is always in flux due to the effect of free will choices. And he mentions that his information comes as well from souls in various discarnate and incarnate worlds, the monitors in Nirvana who track events on Earth, and his mother's thoughts and feelings. But he mentions this is not to say that I echo her ideas about the information she acquires, only that by my awareness of it, I am able to address it. Again, in talking of where his information comes from, he mentions about our lives and saying, everything in your lives and ours already was. And then he emphasizes the word is. In existence throughout the universe, everything you consider, your own ideas, innovations, inventions, and creations have come from the limitless knowledge pool of all that is. It's an interesting thought, isn't it? I read one teacher that said, there is no such thing as original thought. That's a rather peculiar thought in itself, isn't it? That you can't think of something that's original. So that means the most horrible, or indeed the most beautiful thought you can have, has presumably already taken its place in creation. It's interesting, but a rather baffling one, that, I think, in some ways. Anyway, he goes on to say, in each world I manifest whatever style body fits in comfortably with its inhabitants, and I leave in my etheric body that looks like an older version of the sun my mother remembers. And there he was talking about how, by invitation, he can visit other civilizations that desire his help. So he gets around this Matthew. Again, he's talking about whether he was a male spirit. And he says, in answer, I am androgynous, which is balanced male and female energies, and so are all other spiritually evolved souls in either physical or spiritual worlds. Yes, I think I can understand that. I've already found that to be the case with the angelic types. And when you think about it, in the higher realms who are not of the physical nature that we are on Earth, and they do not require the type of body that we have, which is indicative of our sexual, physical aspects. He goes on to say, do I still pursue my Earth lifetime recreational interests? And he says, in explanation, that when people arrive in Nirvana, understandably their last lifetime experiences are predominant, so their favourite forms of recreation continue for a while, unless those were hunting, fishing, bullfighting and the like. And he emphasises that no activity that harms any soul exists in the realm, where Earth's domesticated and wild animals and marine life, who also are souls, live peaceably amongst themselves and the people. So there you are. Now you begin to understand some of the things you can't do in the higher realms. He says, depending on the destination and urgency of the trips he makes, he would travel in the same ways as all other intellectually evolved souls, which is by spacecraft. And if so, he says, it can be in my solid Matthew body, or one I manifest to fit in with the other passengers, astral travelling in etheric body, or teleportation by instantaneous thought. And regardless of where I travel, like the other souls, my evolvement station is the same. There are some interesting comments about how one gets around in the higher realms. It all begins to sound, I think, a little bit more realistic rather than the sort of airy-fairy notions that some people have of what they call heaven. Matthew goes on to talk about another entity called Hatton. I think he's known by most people as Commander Hatton. And he says, I work closely in light with Hatton, beaming to Earth and offering information to you, yet our other services diverge considerably. Hatton and his intergalactic fleet of light warriors are battling the dark forces in physical worlds, and I help civilization provide the most ideal recovery and learning environment for their souls in spirit. So, Matthew does rather long messages, which is wonderful for people who love his work. And he's talking about souls from other civilizations and mentioned that they have visited world leaders, and a number have incarnated by natural birth or are walk-ins. Now, I have to say, and I don't think I've mentioned it before, that I do have reason to believe that I may be a walk-in, and I only put that down to the fact that I have no memory of my life earlier than possibly around 4 years old. I don't know how unusual that is, but I suspect walk-in may be the answer. I recall my oldest son can remember back to something like under 2 years old, so I'm guessing that it is normal to have a memory going back much further than what I've got. Anyway, be that as it may, I thought I'd mention that one. Now, Matthew comes up to more general news, and he's saying that with the eyes globally focused on US President Bush's next move and his low approval ratings in polls, even mainstream media, although still heavily controlled by the Illuminati, has been reporting that his policies are under increasing attack from all corners of the earth. But Bush never has been the driving force of this administration. He says that the real decision makers are his father and Vice President Cheney, who are key Illuminati members. They control the principles in both parties. Partisan politics is an illusion, part of the dark agenda to keep divisiveness, divisiveness of the citizenry alive and well, some of whom are seen willingly in their lust for power, and others who follow through bribery or threats. He says it isn't yet public knowledge that legal wheels are churning steadily to topple the most corrupt and depraved in this government. but following the dots of what has been reported to date shows that movement in this direction is making headway and more is soon to be disclosed. So we have to put our light, I think, behind Patrick Fitzgerald, the chief prosecutor, because I feel no doubt that that's the man he's referring to. Towards the end of Matthew's message, he's saying that while it is so that energy toward a desire, toward a shared desire expands exponentially with numbers of contributors, membership in a group isn't required. It is the collective energy generated towards the same goal that manifests it. And the generators are the single souls putting forth light thought forms from wherever they are. So when people question what they can do as one individual soul, there is a confirmation that every bit counts, and the collective energy becomes something to be reckoned with. Now, Matthew was talking about the spiritual destiny of many individuals and talking about their contracts before they come to Earth. And he's saying that contracts are designed to offer the karmic experiencing chosen by all other principles sharing that lifetime. Many may be benefiting from what appears to be one person's wrong play. Now, that's something I think I've already understood. You get family problems, such as when marriages break up and perhaps you have children, and yet the marriage breakup is in part a lesson to everyone in the family and maybe outside of it to their family's family. So the effects of what happens, whether it be positive or negative, I believe have a much more far-reaching effect than we realise. Now, Matthew continued towards the end of his message to talk in general, and I will read. He said, "It would be wise, compassionate, and advantageous to see if reconciliation can be achieved in harmony." And he's talking there about family members who we might have decided are best kept at a distance. And he's saying these individuals may have provided exactly the experiencing chosen in the family's pre-birth agreement. Our frequent emphasis on do not judge most surely includes family members. If reconciliation efforts made in good faith don't succeed, move forward with forgiveness and fulfillment, knowing that the energy of your attempt does register with all involved. He goes on to talk about the US developing spacecraft capable of shooting down friendly star visitors, and he was asked a question in that connection as to whether they can defend themselves, and his answer is very reassuring, because he said, "We joyfully greet the initiatives there to keep space free of warring, and we shall admit our amusement that a few arrogant minds on Earth see their developments as equal, even superior, to those of our friendly star visitors. It is true that some craft and weapons exist on Earth that are not generally known there, but their capabilities are elementary in comparison with the ET technology that is beyond the comprehension of any Earth scientists whose developments came from instructions by ETs with limited knowledge of such." And of course, they're referring there to the Greys, with whom advanced knowledge was exchanged for allowing them to have bases upon the Earth. Now, his final question, on which I will end, was relating to the hollow Earth and the fact that some people were questioning the existence of it. And he said in reply, "The planet was never solid, but not always since its formation have souls lived beneath the surface. Some souls who perished physically in Lemurian, Atlantean, and prior civilizations chose to return to an Earth lifetime and formed a homeland safe from later residents who it was known would come with cellular patterning with the dark influences that eventually would cause wars, brutality and other ungodly acts. So for millennia, these spiritually evolved souls have flourished in their beautiful sanctuary in Earth's interior, always aware of happenings on the surface and sending love energy to the souls in the midst of those lifetimes. Like your extraterrestrial family who have been helping you on the above planet, the souls in the interior will introduce themselves when it is safe to do so. You will experience the reality of what we have been telling you from the beginning, that you have been loved, assisted, cared for, and honored. And on that loving note, I say farewell for this moment. So, I think all of Matthew's messages are very well worth reading. But there are some interesting points brought up by that particular one. I'm now going to do a very quick review of my own messages for the last week, just to pick out the theme, or one or two main points. And on Monday last, I had Saint Germain, who was speaking of different levels of consciousness and saying that our beginnings were as gods and that we became involved in creation, and how eventually some became what are known as the fallen angels, who descended into matter, and their vibrations apparently dropped, and they came to believe that they did not need the Creator, and they had a good time doing just as they wanted. But as they moved further away from the Godhead, so they became immersed in the lower vibrations. And Saint Germain went on to talk about light, and he said, only light and the absence of light exist. And that was in the context of talking about our reference to evil, because he said that in reality there is no such thing. On Tuesday, I had Atmos, who is a member of the Galactic Federation, and he was talking of recognizing the love in others and expressing our feelings and showing them in a way which he described as hugging, and commented on the fact that we are perhaps reluctant to show our feelings in that way. And he discussed love and changes and talked about our food intake, how it would be preferable to eat fresh fruit and vegetables, as in absorbing these we also take in the energy that is in them. And he was talking of that in respect of maintaining good health. On Wednesday, I had my lady, Diana, or Diane, I suppose it would be called, as she's got an E on the end of her name, and she questioned whether we thought there was a race against time. And she said there was no race against time, that although it seems perhaps that way upon the Earth with so much going on, they have everything in control. And in talking about the activities of the dark, she told us that they are not a realistic threat to their plan. And she said, in fact, they have already lost the battle. And she talks about how the Illuminati try to promote fear. And she's asking us not to be caught up in that and to ignore it. On Thursday, I had Agra Greer, another Galactic Federation member, who was asking us to break away from the controls and restrictions that surround us in our day-to-day life upon the Earth, and asking us to leave time in our lives for those quiet moments and our own introspection, and to recognize the intelligence that exists behind all life, He said that in the context that some people don't believe in spirit or don't believe they have a need for it. And he feels if we sit back and carefully look around us, we cannot fail to see the Creator's input. Today I had my one Venusian through, Kieron, and he was talking about the difference between intelligence and, I guess, intuition, making the point that intelligence is not necessarily the most useful tool when it comes to understanding matters of spirit. And he also commented on the fact that intelligence often comes with the ego, and people become ego-centered. And he's trying to point the way to spiritual understanding. And he said it is encoded in our genes. And he quoted one or two examples of how archaeologists and historians have found evidence of our past, which past will be made known fully to us when first contact has taken place. But he's saying these type of professional people, the academics, try to ignore or hide information or evidence that doesn't fit in with the recognised pattern. So, there we are. That was briefly the main points of my own messages for this week. I come now to what is, a relatively small section, which is bits of the news that I've picked out that I think are of interest. And I only bring them in because I think they have to be looked at in consideration to what the light workers are trying to achieve, and that is prepare the way for ascension. There was a short message going around, which was circulated by James Gilliland, who sometimes has contacts with the Pleiadians, who are one group of ETs that are very prominently associated with Earth and have been for thousands and thousands of years. And they are also part of First Contact. And apparently they told him that next Tuesday, the 28th of March, is a day of major changes, and that there will be an influx of energy, and it's going to bring out changes that will amplify and quicken everything. And he says that it is bringing up to the light all that is hidden. So that is interesting, particularly when that very same date is the one that some sources, including a Russian source, have said was the one on which George Bush had arranged with his military to attack Iran. I couldn't help wondering whether perhaps it also being a day when this influx of energy was coming in, whether that may in fact prevent that particular military operation from going ahead. Can it be more than coincidence that we've got two quite opposite events forecast for the same day? Now, there's quite a long article that appeared on the Wrens.com website, and they were talking about the Illuminati cash slush fund, which is estimated at $65 trillion. That's amazing, isn't it? The article came out, was dated anyway, on the 23rd of March, and it's by Greg Szymanski. And I'm not going to read too much from this. I just think it was the thought that there is a slush fund which contains that much money. And apparently, this is all tied up with what is known as the Global Security Fund, which was set up in the early 1990s under the auspices of Jacob Rothschild. Apparently, it's a Brussels-based fund, and he says it's no ordinary fund. It does not trade, it is not listed, and it has a totally different purpose. It is being used for geopolitical engineering purposes, apparently under the guidance of the intelligence services. apparently when some of the information came out and it was, I think, toted around the press, I think they ran a mile at the thought of revealing this information and contemplating what the result might be if they did. So it's going to be difficult to get, I think, the media to pick this one up. But anyway, the author of that article has gone into quite a lot of detail, so you can read that on the Wrens.com site if you're interested. There is an email that circulated a couple of days ago, and I simply picked up the headings on this one because it said all US citizens to receive national ID card by 2008. And it says the Real ID Act, passed by Congress and signed by President Bush on May the 11th, 2005, mandates that all US citizens will receive a national ID card by May 2008. And this is what interests me. Without this national ID, it says you won't be able to drive your car, board a plane, train or bus, enter any federal building, open a bank account or hold a job. That is absolutely staggering, isn't it? Talk about forcing you to carry one. And I have to say here in England that our Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has the same objective, although it is initially going to be linked with renewing our passports when he is trying to enforce people to have also a national ID card. He wants to make it compulsory, and as you know, we have this wonderful system here where some of these bills have to be approved by the House of Lords, and they won't approve it, and I think it's gone backwards and forwards from the House of Commons to the House of Lords at least four times. I think in the end it will be pushed through, but it is amazing that Tony Blair is, to all intents and purposes, resigning from his job or vacating it a bit later in the year, and that is already known, I believe. But he will hold on and won't give up these ideas about ID cards. They're extremely unpopular amongst the people, and I know if there was a referendum, they wouldn't be accepted at all. Saw another email this week talking about the amount being spent on the US war, and a report came out of which I can't see the origin unless economy means anything to you, but it said that spending will rise to $9.8 billion a month from the $6.8 billion a month the Pentagon said it spent last year. And the research service said the group's March 10 report cites substantial expenses to replace or repair damaged weapons, aircraft, vehicles, radios and spare parts. So that's a rise of 44%. And I'm sure that must worry people in the States to see that amount of money disappearing so quickly. Yet another email passed around just over a week ago said that there are police memos that say there are arrest tactics for calm protests. And that apparently is in the New York Times. And I read in five internal reports made public yesterday as part of the lawsuit, New York City police commanders candidly discuss how they had successfully used proactive arrests, covert surveillance and psychological tactics at political demonstrations in 2002 and recommend that those approaches be employed at future gatherings. And among the most effective strategies, one police captain wrote, was the seizure of demonstrators on Fifth Avenue, who were described as obviously potential rioters. Now, isn't that awful? What is happening? I leave that one and now come to another email that was floating around. I regret to say I don't always know the origin of these, but I think this came from a website called fcnl.org, and it was originating from the Friends Committee on National Legislation, which is a Quaker lobby, and they said 42% of your taxes pay for war, and that is the percentage of your federal income taxes that went to pay for past wars and the military in fiscal year 2005, the year for which we are now filing our income tax returns. And apparently this committee estimates that the US spent $783 billion in that fiscal year of 05 for past and present military activities. Now again, isn't that staggering? I mean, I don't really understand your money values in that sense, but I mean, that sounds pretty hefty. Finally, I come to a report published on Tuesday, February the 7th, in the New York Daily News. That was by Joanne Gonzalez, and this was about the veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and he was saying that nearly 120,000, that's more than one of every four who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, have already sought treatment at Veterans Health Administration hospitals for a wide range of illnesses, according to an internal study the VHA completed last year. Now, he says more than 30% of these sick veterans are afflicted with some type of mental disorder, mostly post-traumatic stress and depression. And an additional 35,000, more than 29% of the total, were diagnosed with ill-defined conditions. And he says those numbers are way higher than during the Persian Gulf War for ill-defined symptoms. And that was said by one Department of Veterans Affairs officials who asked not to be identified. And they go on to say that nearly half of those soldiers, 4 out of 9, that was reported in a group of nine New York National Guardsmen, showed signs in independent tests arranged by the Daily News of exposure to depleted uranium dust from exploded US shells. And there we are, this matter of depleted uranium seems to be coming into our sights, because people are finding evidence of it now as far as this country, and we wonder what might be the outcome there. Now, I haven't anything specifically on ETs, but I don't know if any of you have picked up at any time on these Wingmaker stories, but there was the website references circulated for the Wingmaker interview with Dr. Neruda. And I've only read one of the interviews at this stage, but if you like that sort of thing, I strongly recommend you read it. Certainly, to my mind, a lot more information than I ever read previously about the Wingmaker chambers, and you may know that they are carved out of solid rock in a canyon in New Mexico. But what is interesting, apart from some references to what is in the chambers, and apparently there are some type of, I don't know whether you call them drawings, paintings, or whatever, that you can be interactive with, which is a strange thing. And apparently there are various prophecies that Dr. Neruda came across. Doesn't necessarily say they came via the Wingmaker's capsule, which he calls a time capsule. So I won't say too much more about it, but apparently there is another ET civilization that set up a group in connection with the technology that is involved there, and they reckon that these ETs are actually 15 million light years away. But he went on to say that they can travel from where they are by their means to this Earth in about as long as it would take us to get from here to the Moon or Mars. They have a way of travelling that is beyond our knowledge or comprehension. he thinks that the information that is held in the capsule, it comprises of a number of chambers in this cave, would bridge the gap between our knowledge in the third dimension, which is the five sensory domain, to multi-dimensional seven sensory domain. There we are. I haven't got time to really go too deeply into that one, because I do want to give some attention to the final couple of bits I've got here. On the UFO side, haven't seen anything really over interesting beyond the normal type of sightings. There was one in Modesto in California where a luminous sphere was captured on a camcorder. That goes back to the 14th of March. They are clearly a little bit more interesting. It's nice when you can actually see some sort of photograph or the other. And if you want to follow that one up, that is on the Wrens.com site. I could mention my own UFO sighting, one that I had in the 1980s. I had been meeting on a monthly basis at a private meeting to try and make a mind-to-mind contact with UFOs, and the guy who was leading our group was successful in doing that through telepathic communication. And I was going home after the meeting. I think it had gone 12 o'clock at night, and I was in a reasonably countryfied area and going downhill, and suddenly from behind me, and therefore peering in my front windscreen, came this silvery blue disc. I mean, obviously at night time all I saw was the light, but the shape was sufficient for me to know that it was circular, and it was travelling very slowly, wasn't over big, and it went ahead of me, and I was coming towards a T-junction, and then it finally disappeared over the tops of houses that were in front of me. But it was a beautiful silvery blue colour, and what took my notice was something I hadn't heard of at that time, because bear in mind I'm going back to the 80s, and it was the effect it gave out of pulsating. It was almost as though as it went along it left a very slight image behind it. Most peculiar thing, but I felt that was a sighting that was meant for me, because we had been meeting for quite a long number of months to make contact, and I just felt that had to be more than coincidence that it happened on my way back from that meeting. So there you are. I'm lucky, I've had my own experience there. So I come finally now to what I call various messages, or on the side of light, because we've had a whole mixture of stuff up to now. And I've got quite a few. They go back quite a few weeks, in actual fact. So I will talk of one here. And again, I'll only touch upon the highlights. There isn't time, really, to read whole messages. And this was one that was circulated by... the Sedona Journal of Emergence, which you can see on the website sedonajournal.com. And it was talking about how we create everything around us, and saying that there is nothing outside of you but a reflection, a mirror. Whatever your focus is, so you'll see it in the mirror. When you focus on fear, violence, discordance, when you listen to other people tell you about reality, tell you that you do not live in a safe universe, tell you that you must do thus and thus to be safe, so indeed you create grand drama. You tap into all of this. It becomes part of the fabric of your belief structure, and then it is exactly what you create, because you indeed create it all. That's all I want to read from that message, though there were some other parts of it that are also interesting, but isn't that a very timely reminder to us that when we listen to all the negative things, that there is a danger we might give that energy and carry that with us. So I think whilst we can stand back and listen and observe, we have to make sure that we don't become too, shall we say, emotionally involved in things. we can be responsible, probably, for causing the very things that we do not wish to see, and certainly responsible for them if we exhibit fear. Now, every now and again on the email side, I see messages from a site that goes under the name of Heaven. It's a very nice one. And in fact, I think they call themselves Heaven Letters. And it comes out from the God Writing International Society of Heaven. And this particular one reads, God said, the world does not have a good reputation. Often it is looked at askance, and unruliness and injustice duly noted. And yet, from this same world, flowers grow, the sun rises, and despite all of its idiosyncrasies, this is your world, and all is well with it. Beauty is on the rise, you are rising, and you are pulling the world up with you. You escalate the world. Despite its faults, the world is rising. It will be easier to see the blush of the rose in the world. The world is softening. The tug of war between might and right is lessening. Might will be replaced simply because consciousness is rising. What was okay yesterday will not be today. There will be a new restlessness. The world is going to shift, beloved. Dreams will come true. There will be honesty of thought and honesty of speech. There will be less pomposity. There will be pure people you will mutter about under your breath. The life in the world will become a calm painting. There will be less commotion. Struggle will be less because what will there be to struggle against? Peace, truce, fighters returning to their corner. You will laugh more. This is a foregone conclusion. There will be more laughter than sirens. So, that's all I'm going to quote out that one, but they're nice thoughts there, and you think of the number of different sources that these messages are coming through. Very numerous. I've got such a long list of those that actually handle channeling. It's amazing. It's not until you search the website that you realise how many there are. Now, Karen Carbo sends out Just Channelings, and you can subscribe to those, and you'll get plenty of reading, that's for certainty. And there was a message that was talking about the Lord who told one of the channelers that the summer of 2006 is going to sizzle. I mean really sizzle. It's going to sizzle with the supernatural. I believe the Lord has told me that in 90 days, and that would take it to June, July, August, there will be 90 days of unprecedented supernatural activity worldwide. And it says, get ready, get ready, get ready. Approximately 90 days from now, there will be a supernatural release from heaven. It will be a 90-day rush of Holy Spirit power, similar to the original day of Pentecost. This mighty rushing wind will release upon the worldwide church a sizzling 90-day period of, and it lists three unprecedented world healings, unprecedented worldwide signs, and unprecedented worldwide wonders. So there we are. We've already been promised that this is the year that first contact will take place. And that being the case, I have to think that it ought to have happened before these 90 days come about. Because it's difficult to see this happening, I think, in our present climate. But there you are. The changes are lining up for us. And that one sounds particularly interesting. Again, from Karen Carbo's Just Channeling, there was one that came through called The Illusion of Domination. And that is the Holy Spirit through Teresa Miller, and that also can be read on the SedonaJournal.com site. Apparently, the question that was asked of the Holy Spirit about what's going on in the world with all the fascist changes in our own government, and will we be okay? It's a very good question. And the answer was, yes, thank you, dear one. We hear your concern and your request. We would like to share with you what we see happening in your experience. You are experiencing what is described as a lifting of the veil before your eyes. That veil has been put into place for longer than time itself in your history. You are now seeing that everything that you thought defined reality for you was manufactured in order to compel you to comply and behave in alignment with the will of those who would enslave you for their own use, you see. You're starting to see that. And it goes on to say, do you remember the movie with Jim Carrey where he lived his whole life on a movie set? Apparently that was the Truman Show. And they did everything possible to keep him from waking up and realizing it because they made a lot of money from creating a TV show with him and his asleepness as the main character. That is a perfect analogy for where you find yourselves now. So the question is, whom do you trust? How can you trust those who participate in the very structures that maintain this illusion in the first place? Do you understand your skepticism and concern? Right, that's all I'm going to read from that message, but again, that's very interesting, isn't it? I read into that that it's saying, I think as we've been told before, that what we live in is a hologram, and we are helping to create it, and we are living in this illusion of unreality, and I suppose it's changing, saying that it's up to us to change it. So there you are. Again, that's sort of a thought-provoking message there. There was a message that came through from Archangel Michael. Came through Celia Fenn, who's a very good channeler. And he was talking about the energies for February. I think I actually started to read them out last week. And so I'll sort of come in a little bit into the message where he's saying that not everyone has reached home as yet, and that some may not be ready. And so at this time, humans on Earth are existing on many different levels of awareness or dimensions of being. So what is real for you may not be for them. And so, dearest light workers, you will experience a kind of shifting and sorting as individuals of similar consciousness form communities of thought and awareness. And the movement between levels is still very fluid and open, and you will need to keep choosing home with its energy of peace, gentleness and love, above all the dramas of separation and anger that are on offer on the lower dimensions at this time. This will be increasingly important after March, when the choices will become very clear as each level of reality unfolds into the intentional direction of that grouping or level. And he concludes in that part of the message, so dearest light workers, now is the time to call in your soul families and clans and align with communities of service. Align with the highest possible vibration of home. At this time, it is available and open to all who seek it. And he says, welcome home, human angels. So again, that's very interesting. I must say, I do like Archangel Michael's messages, and doesn't seem to make any difference whether they come through Rona or whether they come through Celia Feng. I find them all very delightful and very instructive. Now, I have to say to you, if you're not already aware, that the format of the program has changed very slightly, and I will be concluding it at the 55-minute mark, which is rapidly approaching. So I will thank you for being with me this week, and hope that the subject matter that I have chosen to read out or comment on has proved to be of interest. And should you like to make comments, please bear in mind that you can send those comments in through BBS, or if you've got my email address, you're quite welcome to send them direct to me. So, I have, by my reckoning, seconds left, so I will say thank you again, and may God bless you. I hope to be with you next week. Thank you.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.